When I got out of the Marine Corps, I spent the next, 15 years of my life in the music business. And then when that thing called Napster came along and kind of changed the way everybody bought music, it put us right out of business really fast. And so I just kind of had to reinvent myself.
Are you tired of trying to keep ahead in the rat race, only to have so much of your hard-earned money going to the tax collector? Equity doesn't pay the bills. Retirement savings don't pay you now, and there are only 24 hours in a day to work. The only solution is passive income that pays you 24/7 now, not 40 years from now. From vetted investment opportunities to tax saving strategies, let John guide you through all the confusion and take control of your financial life in pursuit of financial freedom. So sit back, relax, and welcome to the Wealth and Freedom Nexus.
Hey, welcome back to another great episode of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus podcast. For all my listeners across 174 countries, thank you for the continued support of this podcast. Really couldn't have done this without you. In fact, I still remember when my first subscriber popped up in Saudi Arabia, of all places. It kind of threw me for a loop. But one of my friends said, hey, it might be U.S. military personnel that's stationed over there, which kind of made sense. But it could be a resident of Saudi Arabia anyways. But if this is your first time you have come across this podcast, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite platform or YouTube, and follow me on my social media channels at W Freedom Nexus. So as I record this in February of 2023, mortgage rates have more than doubled in a year, or about doubled. If you were one of many who bought a property or refinanced a property in the last 5 years or really even 10 years, you may have gotten spoiled with sub 5% mortgage rates. Myself personally, I have a mortgage as low as 2.375%. I have heard as low as 1.8%. And even across my investment portfolio, my highest interest rate is 4.5%. All these rates I really wouldn't have a chance of getting now as we record this. As I said, those days are long gone. Not to say they'll never come back, but times have changed. I'm currently working as a realtor. I'm currently working with a first-time home buyer. She's got great credit, very little debt, and she got pre-approved for about 6.5%. Now, that is actually what I got way back when my wife and I bought our first home. Well, actually, it's our current home. We haven't moved since. But again, we have been a little spoiled with record low rates for a really record low time. But the rising rates does affect affordability of homes, either as an investor or as a homeowner. Now, I say this as a realtor and a real estate investor. Let's just take some examples I've given. The 2.375% on a 30-year mortgage comes to $1,554.61 a month for a $400,000 mortgage. Now, if we bump that interest rate up to 6.5% and working backwards with that same payment, that only affords about a $246,000 mortgage. So quite a bit of a decrease in, whether it's homes, student loans, car, auto loans, we've really been kind of programmed, if you will, to just look at the payment, and the payment dictates what we can afford. And, the payment might be your maximum for your debt to income ratio. And again, working with the mortgage rates, when your affordability says, hey, you can afford a $400,000 mortgage, but then that drops to, well, you can only afford a $246,000 mortgage. That's quite a bit of a hit, and definitely really cuts down the number of available homes that you're able to purchase. Now, we are still at a record low inventory for housing. Nationwide, this is a problem. Demand is there, but inventory just hasn't been able to keep up. We've actually been behind the eight ball ever since the Great Recession in 2007. On top of that, inflation is still stubbornly high, which pushes up the rates via the Federal Reserve. So we're kind of caught in a really quagmire, if you will. Many people have said that the Federal Reserve, with the overreaction to the Great Recession and then the extreme extreme overreaction, some would say, to the COVID-2019 pandemic, which we're coming on to about the three-year anniversary of that, the Fed essentially broke the housing market in the United States, and it's going to take a while to get that back to normal, or if we're ever going to get back to normal. So, you know, with all that said, let's say you're looking to buy real estate as an investor like I am, or as a, you know, first time home. Maybe you're looking to downsize. Maybe you need to get a different home. Well, what do you do? I don't think any of us can call Jerome Powell and say, hey, Jerome, do you mind dropping those rates down so we can get another even 3% mortgage? I don't have a cell phone number, but even if I did, I don't think that's going to work. Now, if you follow me on YouTube, about a year ago, actually did 30 videos of creative ways to get into real estate investing. You can find that in the show notes with a link to that playlist. But basically, there are many additional creative ways to get into, buy, and finance real estate. In fact, my guest today is one who has shared many creative ways to finance real estate, most I bet you have never heard of. Now, I have followed him for years, and his podcast, Epic Real Estate, was one of the first ones I downloaded, came across, and listened to obviously pretty much back in 2014, 2015, and on, when I was putting on 100 to 200 miles on the road with my old job. It's something, you know, keep me company or occupy the time I was doing all that driving. I even got to meet him back in Indianapolis. This was summer of 2018, one of his events. And that networking event, among many others, allowed for me to quit my W-2 job in late 2019, and I have not looked back. In fact, actually, one of the guys that was there that I networked with, I've been friends with ever since, Brandon Neese, had him on my YouTube channel with my hashtag Screw the W2 YouTube show. You can check that out. Well, let me just check back there. I think that was January of 2023. Again, you can find that in the playlist for my YouTube channel. So with that, enjoy today's interview. I hope you get a few golden nuggets and maybe just, you know, kind of get the brain juices flowing. Some maybe different or creative ways to get into real estate. And just so you know, I'm a realtor as well. You know, I can help you finance real estate creatively, especially if you're right here in Minnesota. So with that, we'll get into today's interview after a word from our longtime sponsors. Have you ever wanted to invest like the wealthy and how the 1% do, but think it's out of reach for you? Do you desire a more abundant lifestyle, but think you can't afford it? If so, check out ECI Development. With over 20 years of international real estate experience, Mike Cobb and his team can help you truly diversify your portfolio and lifestyle. How about benefiting from a generational investment that can 10x your wealth or more with a teak hardwood parcel in Panama or Nicaragua? Maybe it'll even lead to residency options in the future. Perhaps you'd be interested in a beachfront condo for under $250,000, enjoying the beautiful sunsets off the Pacific Ocean. Maybe an eco-friendly tiny home for around $100,000. ECI's team can even help you get financing for these investments. To learn more, check out the show notes or go to wealthandfreedomnexus.com/ECI. Hey, Matt, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, John. Appreciate you for having me, I guess.
You bet.
So just like this, I got sidetracked.
No worries. Now, back in, you know, kind of just going down memory lane here a little bit, back in 2015, where I kind of started my financial education journey, if you will, your podcast, Epic Real Estate, was one of the first ones I came across. Learned a lot about, you know, creative real estate, financing. Also, we met up in person back in, oh, Jesus, 4 years ago, but Indianapolis for a convention. But for my listeners that maybe have never heard of you, or maybe have never heard about Epic Real Estate, maybe you can kind of just give us a brief overview. What is Epic Real Estate? Does Epic stand for anything? And how'd you come up with the business, I should say?
Yeah, you know, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I spent the next, you know, 14 years of my life, 15 years of my life in the music business. And then when that thing called Napster came along and kind of changed the way everybody bought music, it put us right out of business really fast. And so I just kind of had to reinvent myself. And so I ended up bagging groceries for a little while, literally went from a seven-figure year to $7 an hour.
Wow.
In about 6 months, I know it was, and I was 34 years old. So it was like, I was supposed to be in my prime. And all of a sudden I was starting from scratch. And, you know, I just found out in the job market, I wasn't really qualified to do anything. Like I didn't have paperwork, like what everyone was looking for.
A documents, degree or certification.
Exactly. And so I was you know, I ended up bagging groceries because I had to feed myself and keep the lights on. But I was just kind of searching. I have to learn something new, and I really miss my money. So what is that going to be? You know, and the most unlikely mentor of all mentors was the grocery store manager who pointed. He said this quote, and I've said it 1,000 times since, at least, where he said, you know, real estate, Matt, it's the final frontier where the average person has a real shot at creating wealth.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, the final frontier? Okay. The average person? I'm feeling far below average at the moment. And a legitimate shot? Okay. I guess that's what I knew. I had to learn something new. So that's what I chose to go learn. And I thought the logical place to start was to go get a real estate license. I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And it only took about 3 or 4 years to realize that I was sitting on the wrong side of the desk.
Yep.
So I had made a super large investment into my own real estate investing education back in 2005. I mean, spending $25,000 on something like that was totally unheard of.
Wow.
I remember my grandma was asking me, so are you going to get a license or a certificate or a degree? Do they have a job placement program, honey? It's like, no, grandma, they don't. So I just kind of embraced what they taught me. And in just a few years, I had taken this concept of escaping the rat race, right? Creating enough passive income to cover your monthly expenses. And that was just a whole new idea for me because I made a lot of money in music. I had big bank account balances, but I was always having to chase the next big hit the following month. So just it was a kind of a whole new way of thinking, like, let's go ahead and create passive income instead of stacks of cash, right?
Yeah. Streams of income versus piles of income.
Exactly. Yeah, I do the mountains versus streams. And I would say just under 4 years, I was able to suppress my expenses enough to where my passive income exceeded that. And I was financially free. Nice. And I wasn't rich by any means, but you know what? I didn't have to work.
Yeah.
And I think having had both, lots of money and now just streams of money, I think I prefer the not being rich, but not having to work more.
Yeah.
I think it was just nicer, less stress, and it was just comfortable.
Cool.
And then I went to this, I got involved in this one little multi-level marketing company for maybe about 6 minutes. I went to some little pep rally they had, and there was some guy on stage, and he had said that wealthy people, this is how they get wealthy. They learn how to do one thing really, really well. And then they create multiple streams of income from that knowledge. And he said the best place to start for most people is once you got good at something was to go and start consulting or teaching.
Ah.
And that's kind of where Epic all started.
Okay.
And it was right about the same time I learned about these membership websites because I was all about passive income now. I had my houses that were creating the passive income. So let's diversify. And now it's the internet and so I was able, I just kind of took those two ideas together, put some videos together, put it behind a little membership paywall, and just kind of put it up there in case, cool. So I got that one. What am I going to go do next? But that just became really, really popular. And I said, this was probably 2009-ish, and I started the podcast.
Okay.
I think Jason Hartman was the only other real estate guy, maybe Sean Terry.
Oh, okay.
The three of us were like the only ones doing a real estate investing podcast. So that was 2009. Here we are. That's 13 years. No one even knew what a podcast was.
Exactly.
So I started doing that for fun. And just the combination of the podcast and then the little members area the membership website I put together, those things just kind of took off. And all of a sudden it was like, it was making as much money as my real estate was.
Wow.
And so that's kind of how I ended up here with Epic. And it was a total accident, but that's where it's at now.
Yeah. All right. Well, like you said, you're financially free. You don't have to work, or you're work optional, maybe is the best way to put it. So
I freaked out when I saw someone on my YouTube channel actually call me a guru. I was like, what? That was like, I was like, oh, I didn't know that. I didn't set out to be that. But
yeah,
here it is.
All right. Well, now, as I mentioned, you started, you know, investing, obviously, you know, right before the, you know, Great Recession, the real estate crash that we saw in the U.S. And at the time of this recording, you know, we're seeing, you know, record high, you know, prices for properties, you know, median prices gone up, you know, double digits. Mortgage rates are, you know, approaching 7%. Who knows what they'll be in 2023. But, you know, during your whole experience from back in 2005, you know, to now, as far as a passive cash flow investor, which markets do you personally like and, you know, either have invested in or maybe still are investing in?
This show is brought to you today by Lightbulb Podcasting.
Are you a busy professional that needs to get more time back in their schedule? If you are a podcaster like me, you have enough on your plate. Why not outsource your podcast production? From editing, show notes, keywords, scheduling, volume balancing and editing, and creating audiograms, podcast production is another job in and of itself. That's why I use Lightbulb Podcasting. Get phenomenal support and an affordable price while you concentrate on growing your brand. Go to www.lightbulbpodcasting.com today to schedule an introductory call. Put your content in the spotlight.
I still like, I like the Midwest and the South just because the purchase price to rent ratio works for cash flow.
Sure.
But as far as the actual markets that I choose, because we met in Indy, right?
Yep. Yeah. Indianapolis.
Yeah. So that's, I choose my markets based on my property management relationships.
Sure.
Because I think one of the, you know, it's rarely discussed secrets to escaping the rat race is not necessarily in the property.
Yeah.
It's in the property management.
Yeah.
You got to do as much due diligence on your property managers as you do the properties themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a great one in Indy. I have a great one in St. Louis, great one in Kansas City, and a great one in Birmingham.
Cool.
I really like my Alabama market. They perform really well. Get a good, because they've appreciated quite a bit there too.
Yep.
And I got the best of both worlds down there. And so that's just kind of where I'm at. And now I just moved to Vegas here a few years ago, and I've lived in Los Angeles my entire life. And so trying to cash flow in LA is possible.
Yeah, probably like a 0.02% rent to value ratio or somewhere in there.
It's just ridiculous. And so when I came to Vegas, I was like, ooh, I get to start, you know, tinkering around in my own backyard for once. And so we have a few properties here.
Oh,
but gosh, over the pandemic, I mean, the property prices just went through the roof to where it's almost out of reach to cash flow here now too.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think a lot of people have seen that too. I know for a while, off the top of my head, Nashville and Charlotte were kind of like up and coming areas. And I even looked at it and like overnight, I mean, if you owned and the property doubled or some cases tripled in value, you're doing great, but good luck trying to cash flow there now.
Yeah. I wish I would have got in earlier on Nashville. I really love that place and love to have some stuff there.
What's the old adage? Hindsight's always 20/20. So, yeah. All right. Well, as we get into the main topic I wanted to bring you on, Matt, for the podcast, you know, and I've, you know, full disclosure, I'm a realtor as well. I'm a real estate investor and I network and meet with a lot of people that just, you know, they have really bad credit, or surprisingly, I come across a lot that just have no credit, you know, can't get the conventional financing, maybe don't have the, you know, money for a 5-20% down payment. But with your podcast, your seminars, your membership, et cetera, you've really highlighted a lot of real estate strategies or how one can acquire real estate that I don't think is really mainstream knowledge. You know, I know we've talked a little bit off camera, but do you think we can quick rattle off maybe 10 creative ways, so to speak?
Sure. I mean, there's really just, I mean, I guess the creative way is anything that you can come to an agreement with the seller.
Yeah.
The seller has the right to sell their property however they want.
Sure.
So if a buyer and seller agree, then that transaction can happen.
Yeah.
Always like, I say, like, if the seller wants to sell their house for a bucket of hot wings, they could do that.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm still working on that because I think that'll make a great story, but I haven't found that person yet.
All right.
Your creativity, you're kind of, it's limited only by your own creativity.
Sure.
So I always throw that kind of obscure example out there, but it really can get that creative.
Okay.
I think, but the predominant method that I use is either I'm going to have the seller finance the property for me.
Okay.
So basically, I'm going to purchase the property and make payments to them over time. It's like buying a house with an IOU.
Sure.
Or the second version would be taking over the payments on the mortgage that's already in place. Or a combination of those two. And that's kind of the gist of it. And then, you know, you've got lease options and you've got contracts for deed and that type of stuff, but they're really all just variations of the same thing.
Okay.
Just different types of paperwork.
Sure.
That's where the creativity comes into play.
Okay. And you actually kind of highlight on one, you know, assumption of mortgage, and, you know, we don't have to go, you know, dirty details is
Is this one assumable? Is this not assumable? And at the end of the day, it's just a mortgage loan. Then instead of Matt paying those monthly payments, John's going to take over the payments starting January 1st or whatever the case may be. One, shall we say, creative financing option per se, you've mentioned numerous times in your podcast, and I'll be honest, I still can't ironically wrap my head around this, but you've called it the wraparound mortgage. I don't know if that's an official term or just, you know, a Matt term, so to speak, but how does that play in the creative financing?
We'll be right back.
Are you somebody that's been dealing with betrayal trauma? Are you somebody that has a really giant heart and you want to give back to this world, but you're not sure how you can do that because your trust has been broken? Well, I've got good news for you. I have the perfect podcast for you to come and listen to. It's called The Other Side of the Struggle, Healing from Betrayal Trauma by Erin Anderson Betrayal Trauma Coaching. Come learn how to trust again. Come learn how to open up that giant heart and heal from your betrayal trauma at The Other Side of the Struggle on all major platforms.
Well, what typically a wraparound mortgage, it's just two mortgages on a loan, really, okay, that you've wrapped into one loan.
Okay.
So it usually involves, it's a subject to and typically a seller finance type deal.
Okay.
So if you got that, the house is worth $100,000, you're buying it for $100,000, they have got a $60,000 mortgage on it. And then, so you're going to take over those payments and then maybe pay $30,000 as seller financing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that $30,000 and the $60,000 would be like kind of combined into what we call an all-inclusive trust deed.
Okay.
So it'll be one loan.
But okay.
You can keep them separate. You don't have to have them. Like, it's just kind of how people want to do it.
Okay.
Pros and cons to both sides.
All right. Mm-hmm. And then, like you mentioned, the assumption of mortgage, or, you know, could you talk a little bit about, you know, maybe for some of my listeners, the first they've heard of a subject to, like, I'm selling a property to Matt subject to the existing financing. How does that work?
Okay. So if I were to go present that offer to a seller, what would happen is I would take ownership of the property.
Okay.
Take over the maintenance and the payments on the mortgage. And then, but the mortgage would stay in the seller's name.
Okay.
Okay. But I'm actually the owner. I'm an owner on title.
Okay.
And a lot of people are like, who in the world would do that? But, you know, there's people out there that got bigger fish to fry and they got this house that's a burden to them and they just want to get out from underneath it. They want to preserve their credit score.
Yeah.
They want to move on with their life and they just kind of want to be done with it. And if, you know, the market is not going to give them what they're looking for at the time, then a lot of times that's the option for them.
Yep. So, and now as far as like seller, you know, kind of the creativity, and I know you mentioned before, and I'm just thinking off the top of my head, with the mortgage payments, you've always mentioned, you know, price and terms. And if you can control one of those, you can probably make the deal happen. And if a seller is just, you know, say they're just adamant, I feel my house is worth whatever, $200,000, where maybe it's a little inflated, you've mentioned, well, okay, what if we do a seller carry back? You know, maybe I have a 90-day moratorium on payments and principal only payments. I think you've talked about that a few times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a correlation between the price and the terms, and mm-hmm. you said it perfectly. Like, as long as you can control one of those, you can always make a deal that makes sense for both of you. So if there's a house that's valued at $100,000 and the seller wants $150,000 for it,
mm-hmm.
fine, you can have the price. I'll pay you $50,000 more than what your house is for.
Yeah.
But here's how I can pay for it, is I'm going to give you $100 a month for 20 years.
Yep.
Right. So, and then I'll give you a balloon payment at the end or something like that. But that's just kind of an example how you can overpay for a property and mm-hmm. still have it be a good deal for yourself.
Yep.
And, you know, you being an agent, John, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity now that the properties are sitting a little bit more and sellers yeah. are having to reduce their listing price, that, you know, if you find the right buyer, you can come in and say, you know what, don't lower your price. We'll go ahead and give you your price.
Yeah.
But this is how my seller is going to be able, or my buyer is going to be able to pay for this property. We'll give you a little bit of money down now and the rest later. So how much do you actually need down now?
Yeah.
Perfect. And we'll write this up. And that's I've got agents in three different markets doing that for me all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually introduced to me because when I was an agent for 4 years.
Okay.
And I had an investor in my market that came to me. And I was just, you know, I guess experienced enough to be able to handle it, but still new enough to not know any better.
Okay. Okay.
It is a lot of work and it's difficult to find agents that'll do that, but it made me rookie of the year. It put probably nine extra deals on my record that year. Okay. But you know, I'm sitting there pounding the phones and calling agents and putting these deals together while everyone else in my office was sitting there huddled around the coffee pot talking about how bad the market was.
Yep.
And so that I was on that side of it once, so I know it works.
Yeah.
But it's tough to find an agent that'll actually do that for you.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get a lot of no's. You will get mostly no's.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking for the ones that say yes, because there's such smoking deals when you get one, and it totally makes sense. So you could sit there on the phone and write offers all day, or you could sit there on the weekends and hold open house and just kind of pray somebody walks in.
Yeah. So exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe the last thing, and I know we talked about variations of trust deeds, contract for deeds, you know, lease to own, wraparound mortgages, et cetera. I think the biggest thing a lot of people don't realize, you know, is private money. If they don't qualify for, you know, the Wells Fargo, the JP Morgan Chase or whatever, there's investors, even like myself, that have money to deploy. Mm-hmm. And kind of ironic, back at that Indy event, I networked with two guys, Jack and Josh, out of Fargo, North Dakota, and ended up partnering with them on a deal in Indianapolis, ironically, where I was the banker. I front loaded the money for the mortgage, essentially. I was first lien position. Mm-hmm. I think at the time, I want to say I got like 7%. I think we did have an amortized and then a balloon payment, but they actually used that because it was a fix and flip. This is before the Burr strategy got, you know, sexy or mainstream. And I don't remember what they sold it for, but I know Jack and Josh, and I know you've, you know, met them as well. They wouldn't be able to go into Wells Fargo and say, hey, we found this crappy dump over here. We want to fix and flip it. Will you give me a 30-year conventional mortgage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jack and Josh are two of my rock star students.
So, they're still up in the, well, technically Moorhead market. Not everyone knows where Moorhead, Minnesota is, but it seems like Fargo, North Dakota is like, just right across the border, we'll use that. So.
Awesome. Well, they're great guys.
Yeah.
But so there's a lot of different type of money out there. And, you know, it can be as private as Aunt Sally, right? Mm. Or it could be that there's a lot of DSCR, debt service coverage ratio type loans, investor loans. There's a lot of hard money type loans, a lot of money out there outside of your Bank of America's and your Wells Fargo's and your Chase. And how you get that, it's not necessarily so much on your credit score.
Yeah.
It's going to be more on how's the property expected to perform.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, to some degree, probably more and more right now as, you know, the market fluctuates a little bit, maybe a little bit more based on your actual experience.
Like
how many flips have you done? Right. But it's really easy to just find a partner and go in and get those types of loans. And there's still more money in the system than there are houses available.
Exactly. And I have a hunch with all the Fed's money printing they've done since March of 2020, that's still going to be the case. But who knows what 2023 is going to come up with. So,
that's the big variable. And I've been saying this for a very long time that I think if you are good at finding deals, over the next 10 to 15 years, that's like the best job security out there because just the inventory is so low and the demand is so high. I think I don't think you can overpay for real estate at this moment.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's possible based on what the supply and demand dynamics do.
Yeah.
But the big variable in the room, which I've always said, you got to watch the monetary policy. You got to watch the interest rates.
Yeah.
That's having an impact, right?
Yeah. And I kind of like we say overpay. And I think a lot of it just comes down to the numbers. And I think if you're, you know, whatever the interest rate is, whatever the purchase price is, if you're upside down and bleeding money month in, month out, obviously you've overpaid it, but that's more on the terms versus the price.
Clarifying that, because that is not what I'm recommending.
Yeah, exactly. I swear it's about once a month I see someone on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, mm-hmm. I got this great deal. And I'm upside down $250 a month, but I'll make up for it in appreciation. I'm like, you just wait till you have your first vacancy or CapEx expense. Right. You're going to really be swearing up a storm.
No, I certainly wouldn't recommend paying more than what you could manage. But what I actually meant to clarify is there's such an imbalance of people to houses.
Yep.
Right. The peak of our population right now, I believe, is 32 years old. And the average age of the first-time home buyer is 34 years old. So right now, over the next 48, 36, 72 months, we are going to witness more demand for housing than we've ever seen in the history of the country.
Yep.
At the same time, we're more than a decade behind in building housing.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, it can only go one way.
Exactly.
Unless everybody just starts moving in the same houses together.
Yeah. Right? So,
or they start living with the stars. One or the
other. Yeah. Or under the freeway or expressway or something like that. So And I think I saw a stat from, I think it was from 2010 to 2020, we built the fewest number of homes in the U.S. since the 1930s, I believe, which, of course, we had that little thing called the Great Depression. Yes. And I don't know what the population was in 1930, but I'm guessing it was a lot less than 330 million people.
And here's the things that we know we need more housing.
Yeah.
But now, because of the supply chain and everything, the builders can't build them cheap enough for it to even make sense for them.
Yeah. So
even they're pulling back. The builder confidence keeps on falling.
Yep. And even if they can build it cheap, it's like, well, now I was talking to a builder down in Florida, like appliances are the biggest back order they have now. I mean, they can get everything ready, but it's like, well, as long as you don't need to cook anything or store anything or freeze anything, you're fine.
As long as you don't need protection from the elements, you'll be good to go.
Exactly. So, yeah. All right. Well, again, Matt, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule. And, you know, I hope some of these creative financing strategies maybe, you know, put a little bug in some of my listeners' ears and maybe realize, gosh, I don't have to just get the conventional 30-year Freddie Fannie mortgage from Bank of America. If anyone out there, you know, maybe they have low credit, no credit, whatever the case may be, and they want to get it started in real estate investing, what's the best way to, you know, reach out, learn more, and, you know, how about Epic Real Estate?
Yeah, there you go. EpicRealEstate.com.
Okay.
Hopefully by the time this airs, we'll have a brand new website up with a new calendar of all of our events and how they can connect with us. So we'll just keep it simple. Go to EpicRealEstate.com.
Perfect.
And I just, on the other note, what you were kind of leading into, and I thought you were going to go somewhere else when you were saying that, like if someone else wanted to try one of these creative strategies or something like that, you can still do that with an agent as long as you're connected with someone like you who actually understands how it works.
Yep.
Just understand, if you walk up to any old agent and you start talking about this stuff, you might just scare the poop out of them and then go running for the hills and tell you you're going to jail and all this kind of stuff. Don't believe them.
Exactly.
I've been doing it for a very long time and not in jail yet.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm definitely one of those investor-friendly agents. So I went out there in Southwest Minnesota. Actually, just talked to someone the other day. They didn't know they could do a first-time homeowner, you know, 3.5, or I think it's 5% down payment now. But regardless, actually buy a fourplex, live in one unit, rent out the other three, have their mortgage paid for. And like, wow, I didn't know you could do that. It's like, well, if you don't know what to ask.
Someone would have told me that in my 20s. I wish someone would have told me that.
Yeah, same here, but hindsight 2020, like we said again.
No clue that was even possible then. So but anyway.
All right.
Well, I appreciate it, John. Thank you very much for having me, partner.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Matt. And for those listening, be sure to check out the second part of this on Saturday for the Screw the W-2 YouTube show, where Matt kind of shares his story of going from seven figures to $7 an hour. And I'll just leave it at that.
All righty.
Thanks, Matt.
You bet.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.